conversation continues on the bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. For you younger listeners, you don't know, we had Lance and I had Dick Harmon on every Friday morning, and he became a legend here in the city. He was the head pro at River Oaks forever, and it just became such appointment radio every week. Friday morning, 8 o'clock, Dick would join us, and it was just unbelievable radio.
Can you imagine?
And I got to tell you.
All the little sayings he
had. Oh, it was unbelievable. Oh, can you? So, but any time he talked about his brother Butch, he would just lie. I got to tell you, I was with Butch yesterday and Ricky, and it was just so much fun reminiscing and hearing all Butch's stories. Anywhere Butch goes, everybody's laughing, period, exclamation point. It's so much fun. But I got to tell you, Butch, nobody was prouder of you than your brother Dick. He just loved you, and if he didn't convey it to you before he died, I'm going to tell you, every time he talked about you, he just lit up.
Right. In all honesty, John, first, thanks for having me on. And second, but way back in 1980 when I was down at rock bottom, to be honest with you, I was divorced. I didn't have a job. I was really spiraling out of control. And Dick and Nancy saved my life. I moved to Houston and lived with them for a while. Went to work for Dave Marr and Jay Revere building golf courses. And the rest is history. Dickie was a special human being.
Yeah. I mean, he was unbelievable. We miss him still. To this day, no question about that. It was fun. It was great. Great to see you and Craig and Billy. Who's funnier, you or Billy?
Well, Billy would tell you he is, but I think that's bullshit.
Wait, you're not on Sirius XM here, John and Lance, on satellite radio. You're not on Sky Sports now, so you can't say BS. Okay.
I'll just say BS then.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
That is fun. So, okay, I want some stories this morning. I want to have fun, but I got to ask you about Liv and about the tour. And where, I mean, you're close to Greg Norman. That was your first number one player, so you know Greg real well. And yet here he is. I feel like he's public enemy number one.
Agent of chaos.
Yeah, he really has been. Where do you stand with this thing with Liv and the PGA Tour?
You know, I'm okay with Liv. I think we live in a society of free enterprises, and if the guy chose to go play at Liv, I don't have a problem with that. I think there are consequences for every decision you make in life, and those guys that went to Liv knew what the consequences was where the PGA Tour was concerned, and I think they just need to live with that. You can argue whether you heard him say, we're doing it to grow the game and play a fewer tournaments. We know that's not right. I mean, they did it to build their bank accounts, and nobody could blame a guy for that. As far as the PGA Tour is concerned, I'm a little tired of these verbal pillow fights between the two, between Liv and the PGA Tour. I think it goes back to the old days of the old USFL. You remember that, mm-hmm. Where you had the gamblers here in town, and then Kelly was our quarterback and stuff, and Herschel Walker played in New Jersey. But the way I look at it right now is, look, if you went over there to Liv, you realize you are not going to be on the PGA Tour anymore, so stop trying to go back over there. And it just is what it is, except the decision you make. The other situation is that, Greg has a vendetta for the tour. This was his idea, John, 27 years ago.
Yep.
And it looked like he had it pulled off, and I think Jack and Arnold decided not to do it, and he had TV rights set up, and Beeman would have been the commissioner then, I believe. And they went against it, so it didn't happen. So here we are. We fast forward now, and we're in this situation. I think eventually the two organizations are going to get together, whether Greg's still involved or Monahan, the PGA Tour commissioner, is still involved. I don't know. Any time will tell. But I think they just ought to both be who they are. Liv is who they are. PGA Tour, who's they are. And let's just deal with it and see what happens.
If you were PGA commissioner, would you let the guys back in?
I would say if they left Liv Tour and wanted to come back to the PGA Tour, yes, I would let them in, to be honest with you.
So there's no chance that they could play. I mean, it's only eight tournaments a year. They're growing. Liv is growing a little bit. why not let him play there? And when you want to come back to the tour, you come back to the tour.
Well, I think that would be the easy scenario. I don't think it's going to happen because the egos have been hurt on both sides. There's been a lot of hostility verbally on both sides. Greg is a very interesting individual. I've been a friend with Greg Norman for a long time. I worked with him for many years. I was the one who got him to number one in the world, which I'm very proud of. But Greg's got a big ego himself, and the tour has a big ego. And right now, both of them are trying to flex their muscles. And I think the best thing in the world for golf is to figure out some kind of scenario. Say at the end of the year, you have a combination gigantic tournament for a lot of money with the European Tour, the PGA Tour, and LIV, and play two or three events at this time of year when everything's over with and see what happens. But the way they're going right now reminds me of the political parties. The Democrats and Republicans are going in opposite directions, and it seems like these two tours are going that way.
Butch Harmon with us here, the preeminent golf coach. I saw him fix a guy in yesterday. I mean, honestly, in like one short let, to move the ball back in your stance, and the guy started hitting the ball. It was unbelievable. That's how good Butch is. This guy couldn't hit it. Couldn't get off the tee, and Butch had him hitting it good in one quick little lesson. Butch, I want to ask you some questions.
Sure.
Have you been on Sky for 25 years more?
Yeah, 25 years. I've done TV for Sky Sports.
So
yeah.
Sky Sports is the European version of ESPN. They do play-by-play of golf events, all sporting events. Sky Sports is that. But Butch does their... What's your most embarrassing moment on Sky Sports?
Well, you just told me I can't say things. It'd be hard for me to try and clean it up, but I'll see if I can...
Can you clean up that story you told us yesterday?
Yeah, I think I can clean it up a little. You know, we were at... I think it was the U.S. Open at Oakmont. And we had just come out of a 2.5-hour rain delay. And on live TV, rain delays are a pain. I mean, you're just inventing stuff to talk about, and you're rehashing everything everybody's already seen, and everybody wants the players to get back, and they want to see some golf. And after about 2.5 hours, they announced that they were going to let the fans back in, and the players were going to the range and warming up. And so, you know, we're coming out of this 2.5 hours of just nothing but talk. And for some reason, the cameras were on the people coming into the stands, everybody rushing back to the stands to get in there. And every time somebody would sit down, their rear ends would get all wet, and they'd jump up, you know, and it was, people were laughing at them and stuff. And I don't know why they kept the cameras on them, but finally they said to us, go ahead, you guys need to talk about what's going on. So I started to say, you know, boy, there's going to be a lot of wet butts or wet asses out here today. But I said, I better not say that. So I said, there's going to be a lot of wet fannies out here today. And in my earpiece from our production truck, I can hear everybody laughing. So I hit my kill switch and I said, well, what's so funny? And my producer says, do you have any idea what you just said? And I said, Jason, I didn't want to say wet asses. He goes, I really wish you would have. And I said, but I said wet fannies. He says, do you know what a fanny is? I said, no, it's your rear end. He goes, no. In Europe, that's a woman's front part. And you just said that to 8 million people.
Oh, my God.
OMG. So to 8 million people, I just said there's going to be a lot of wet out there today.
I just learned something today.
I didn't know that either.
I just now learned something.
I knew what a cigarette was. You're not supposed to say
that. Yeah,
right. There's different words over there that you got to be careful with. I didn't know fanny was that. I had no idea. No,
I didn't either, you know. And it was the funny thing about it, the next day I come into the production company earlier, and the girls that worked there had this whole list of names, words with double meanings that we think it means one thing and we think another. And I said, all right, how many calls to the studio in London did you get because I said wet fannies? And he said, none, because you're a damn Yank, but don't ever say it again.
Butch Harmon with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Tell us your best Dustin Johnson. You got a Dustin Johnson story you can relate to us?
Well, you know, DJ gets a bad rap. You know, everybody thinks DJ's not the brightest bulb in the chandelier, and he's fly like a fox. And when he does interviews, he doesn't give him any answers at all. You know, they're all one-word answers. Hey, Dustin, you played really well today. Yeah, I did. I shot 62, and blah, blah, blah. And he does it on purpose just to get out of the interview room because he hates doing it. So DJ is actually a really, really good guy. He's a very generous guy. He's so much fun to be around. And he can say some goofy stuff every now and then, like all of us can. I think the funny thing, one of the funniest things I've ever seen is, you know, this thing on the PGA Tour, they don't have it anymore. They outlawed these green books, the green reading books. And if you've ever seen one, you've got all these little arrows pointing in one direction and a different direction. And heck, I would have to put glasses on to see them because they're so small. But the guys were into it, you know, to show them where putts go and stuff. Mm-hmm. And Austin, DJ's brother, always carried the book. So there was one tournament, I can't remember which one it was, and I was watching on TV, and DJ puts his hand back to get the book, and he looks at the book, and he turns it upside down, and he turns it sideways, and he turns it back, just hands it back to his brother. He didn't know what the hell it was. He's looking at it like, why am I looking at this thing? And then, to make it top it off, Austin had to tell him, No, DJ, you're on the wrong hole. Sixth hole, not the first hole.
Hey, Butch, I've got to ask you about, John and I talked about it during all the pandemic stuff when it came out, but the Tiger Woods documentary was fascinating to find out the human side of Tiger, the relationship with his father, how complicated that was. Tiger, you know, finding out exactly what was going on with Tiger's own addictions and things like that and how deep it ran. How much did, first of all, did you see the documentary, and B, what were your thoughts on that documentary, and how much did that, you know, really bring you back to the moments you were with Tiger when he was a young pro?
I did see the documentary. I had kind of mixed feelings on it. I thought it was probably the truest thing that's ever been done about Tiger. You know, his dad had a lot of problems, and he wasn't the greatest guy in the world, and I think the saddest thing for me was that his kids had to see that, because there was already a book that had come out that was along the similar lines and stuff, and I felt sorry for his kids having to see the negative side of it, as we all have a negative side in our life. So it was, you know, it was something that I'm not sure they needed to do. I know in this day and age they want to do anything that's negative for anyone to get the ratings and so on and so forth, but yes, I did watch it, and I'm not sure that I ever really enjoyed it, though, to be honest with you.
No, must have been a lot of stuff hard to watch. What do you think about going forward? He had to withdraw this past week. What do you think about him going forward, Butch?
Well, you know, I said years ago, when, before he came back and won the Masters in, 2019, I think it was, I never thought he would win another major. So you can't ever say never with Tiger Woods. He will prove you wrong every time you say that. I think we're going to have to wait and see how he plays in the tournament with his son here coming up in a couple weeks. From what I understand, he's playing very well down in Florida, but he struggles walking. And, you know, we all saw it at Augusta last year, how difficult it was for him to walk, and especially on that hilly golf course. So I'm very interested to see how he holds up just swing-wise with that, and to see what swing he's using, because with all the injuries he's had to obviously change his mechanics of his golf swing. I listened to the interview they had from the Hero Tournament that just happened this past week, and, you know, he said that he's playing really well and shooting good scores and can hit every shot. He just has a hard time walking, so we'll just have to see what happens there. But I would never say something with Tiger Woods. I'll tell you an interesting story, John. Years ago when we were playing the match play championship at La Costa in Southern California, Tiger and I were on the range, and it was, Tuesday, because the tournament started on Wednesday, and we were working on hitting a high fade with a 3-iron, and he was struggling a little hitting it. He'd hit some poles, and he couldn't quite hit the shot he wanted. And he wasn't kind of getting what I was trying to tell him how to do it. And I always used to be able to challenge him to get him to do something. Well, this range is a funky range because it's not real long, and it's got fences all around it. And at the end of this range, at about 230 yards, there was this opening to the right side where the cart would come out to pick up the balls. So I put a $100 bill on the ground, and I put five balls on top of the $100 bill. I said, all right, here's the deal. I'm sick of watching these shots you're hitting. I got five balls and $100 says you can't hit a big old high fade right through that opening down there. Well, of course, the first one he hit, beautiful high fade right through the opening. He reached down, snatched the 100 up out of the ground. It's the best 100 I ever made. He went on and won the tournament. It was great.
Unbelievable. What a talent.
You tell this guy he can't do something, he's going to prove you wrong. I guarantee you that.
Most talented guy you've ever coached? Tiger. Gotta be Tiger.
I would say most natural talent of anyone I've ever coached, yes, without a doubt.
Who was the best worker you've ever had? A guy that you knew if there was something that needed corrected or working on, that this guy was going to be the guy?
Well, Greg Norman and Tiger Woods worked harder than anyone, and both of them became number one in the world when I worked with them, and they outworked everybody, always. And unlike the average golfers, who never wants to practice anything they're bad at, they always want to practice something they're good at. They would always work harder on the stuff they weren't real good at until they became good at it. So Norman and Woods both, at the time, both of them held the number one ranking longer than anybody has. And today we see it's by committee because there's so many good players. They worked their tails off.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. That in all sports, I mean, it really doesn't matter.
The
guys who are truly the greatest,
Michael,
are hard workers, but they work on things that they're not great on. They try to strengthen their weaknesses, and like Michael did with, you know, his outside, his perimeter shooting, his 3-point shooting. It's like that in Tom Brady, arm strength. So he goes out. They're the hardest workers. Imagine that. And they work on things that they're not good at so that they become better at it and sometimes even become good at it. Imagine that.
Absolutely.
So that's what makes them the greatest players in the world and who they are. They're always trying to improve. They always want to get better at their craft and better at what they do. We have a lot of players today that are really good. You know, they work, but they don't work as hard as these guys work. And to be great at anything, it doesn't matter what it is. You've got to work your tail off. And you've got to never stop learning. Look, I'm 79 years old, and I'm still trying to learn. I'm still trying to become a better golf instructor, a better teacher. And sometimes I see something that somebody's doing, and I'm like, how in the world did he get that club square at impact from that position? And you watch it, and you put it in your memory bank, and 4 or 5 years later, you see a guy did the same thing, and you go, oh, well, I remember this guy. He did X, Y, Z, and you can use that to help. It was like the guy we were talking about yesterday you were playing with. And it was funny if you remember what I said. I forget what hole you were on. I've been watching you guys play a few holes. I said, okay, I can't take this any longer. I got to help you. Your ball position so bad is outside your left foot. Now, I didn't explain any of this to them. If you set up wrong and to hit a golf shot, you got to get out of that at some point in time in your swing. And if you start with your ball position too far forward, your left hip, your left shoulders are obviously wide open because of where your hands and arms are, which means you don't turn your shoulders and hips that much going back. You open up that much sooner coming through. But I didn't explain all that to the guy. I just took the ball and moved it back, I don't know, 4 or 5 inches. And I said, now keep your same setup right here. Get comfortable. And I'll just make a nice swing and hit it right down the middle. And, you know, I said, that'll be 2,000. Thank you very much.
Dude, give me your email. I'll send you an invoice.
Please, you're charging more than 2,000. All right. Before you go, Butch Harmon with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, in case you're just joining us, the legendary coach. You're like the Nick Saban of golf coaches, and yet, like you said, I've had 5 number ones, and I've been fired 4 times. What a strange business you're in, right?
Well, it's any coach in any sport. I mean, everything's – people are going to move on. It's not what you have done for me. It's what you have done for me yesterday, you know, and that's part of the game in golf, especially golf. Professional golfers, it's a tough sport. I mean, you lose more than you win, by far. They're very fragile. You know, they get going bad. You look at someone who just came back to me, Ricky Fowler, who I had a lot of success with. And then when I retired from the tour in 2019, Ricky went in a different direction. And he fell way down in the world ranking. And he called me about a month and a half ago, and playing beautifully again, and you hope your listeners will see that this the next golf season, how good he's going to play. But, you know, and other times people think they've learned everything they can learn from you, and they want to go listen to someone else, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's human nature.
Yeah, and golfers are, it's never their fault, is it?
No. Yeah, you like what I told you that story yesterday. I coined this phrase on TV. A guy hit a poor shot during a tournament and went over the green. He looked at the caddy and said to him, is that the right yardage? And I think the way I verbalized it was, I said, look, you got to understand that it's never the player's fault. If the guy hits it too far, too short, it's the caddy's fault, bad yardage. If he hits it left or right, it's the coach's fault, bad instruction. If he makes a bad decision, it's the mental coach's fault, didn't have him mentally ready to prepare. If he shows up and his back or something hurts, it's his trainer's fault. He didn't get himself in the right physical condition. If he shows up in a bad move, it's his wife or his girlfriend's fault, or sometimes both.
You did go there. You did go there on Sky
Sports. I did go there.
You
yeah.
did go there. That's Butch Harmon right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Man, great reminiscing with you. Great stuff. It's great to have you in town. We really appreciate it. You were here for so many years, and proud of you for living in Vegas now for 25 years. You're there.
25 years I've lived in Vegas. Yes,
that's not a bad life. It's not a bad life you're living there, Butch.
Now I tell you what you have to do when you live in Vegas, John, and remember this: is when you live in a place like Vegas, you got a lot of friends that always want to come visit you, and they'll call me up and they say, "Hey, Butch, I'm coming to Vegas." And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to be out of town." They said, "Oh, I didn't tell you when I'm coming." I said, "Doesn't matter, I'll be out of town. Don't worry about it."
Because it'll cost you, that's for sure. Butch Harmon with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Great catching up, Butch, man. We really appreciate it. It was great seeing you yesterday and being here for Dick's event. Thank you for coming to town and raising money.
It's my pleasure. I love this city. I have a lot of good friends here, and I'm a huge Astros fan. I was at the World Series of 3 games this year, and I loved every minute of it. Thanks for having me, John. Great to see you guys.
Yeah, and honorary Astros owner right there, Butch Harmon, with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. And as a matter of fact, I can tell that story is Butch, Jim Crane said.
Save it.
Okay, save it for
save
the other
Because we still got a bunch of stuff to get through. So let's save it when we come back. I do want to tell you about John Daspa. Speaking of save it, we're working on a date for John Daspa. It's talking about having dinner with the University of Houston basketball team for the NIL stuff. He's doing NIL. They went and I got a chance to watch it, the commercial they filmed. For U of H basketball team. He wants to be involved with NIL for University of Houston. It's one of the things that he's doing is football and basketball. He's been part of that. He is part of helping inside the communities here at different schools, especially his old school at Clear Falls where he went to high school. He's a guy who's worked with Selvin Young on some different things that they're doing. I love the fact that he's so involved in the community, and it's not a surprise. He went from a big law firm at Fulbright Jaworski where he was one of the top dogs and started his own law firm. He is now doing personal injury law. He has got 70 different lawyers in 10 different cities working hard for you, and a lot of them he's recruited from some of the top firms around the city of Houston and the state of Texas, and they want to work for you. They want to get you the money you deserve. If you've been injured and you've lost your wages, you've lost an opportunity to work, you've been hurt, you've got hospital bills. Well, the insurance companies are going to need to pay that, and how are they going to pay? Well, they're going to get as low a number for you as possible through their lawyers. You need someone to fight for the other side, which is for you, the good guys, and that's what John Daspit is doing. DaspitLaw.com is the website if you want to look into it, but Refinery Blast, I mean, it really doesn't matter. He'll handle the biggest cases, and he's often the guy that is called for some of these biggest cases around the state of Texas. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. That's 713-322-HURT.
ESPN 97.5.